Not that I know of. So I don't know of anybody that has asked us, you know, for that. But look, you know, name, image, and likeness is not really name, image, and likeness. I mean, I think we all understand what it's become and what we allowed it to become. And I said long ago and got very criticized for, is this what we want college football to become? So it's becoming what it's becoming, and that's okay. I mean, we're just adapt and do what we have to do to be able to compete, whatever the circumstances are. So do I think that it would be judicious to have some guardrails on some things? I think you can figure that one out just as well as anybody else.
There you have it. Nick Saban making his point on NIL as he addressed the media yesterday afternoon following practice. Alabama, of course, traveling to Starkville, Mississippi for an 8 o'clock kickoff this Saturday night. Hey, it's Matt, it's Lars, it's Justin, and a lawnmower, and we welcome everybody into the show. And Nick has made it very clear from the get-go that he wasn't really, really fond of this NIL. But he said he would adapt and play through it. So that's what he's doing. A collective has been set up. But you can just tell in the tone of his voice, Lars, he still doesn't like it. He'd rather it be left behind.
Yeah, it's clearly it's pay for play. Yep. That's what
it's
it is.
It's not NIL.
It's not NIL, no. I mean, and so last week, the House Committee on Small Businesses held a hearing to discuss this issue, and in a document posted on the committee's website, Gene Smith, the Ohio State Athletic Director, said that players are asking for $5,000 just to visit, and that's become common. $5,000 just to visit.
Whoa.
And yeah, and so... And this, you know, the NCAA has been pushing for federal name, image, and likeness legislation in Washington for some time. But last week's hearing, again, at the House Committee on Small Businesses, it was supposed to be another step in the process. But talks broke down on so many different topics multiple times between congressmen and congresswomen. I mean, the Kentucky representative, John McGarvey, he raised the question of, does the NCAA even need help? His direct quote was, is the NCAA so inept right now that this
is
something? Well, in Kentucky. He's living in Kentucky. No, his quote is the NCAA so inept right now that this is something Congress must legislate?
What is he doing on the committee if he doesn't know that answer?
I mean, that is, it's just ridiculous. And this is the problem. This is the problem. I mean, look, it's representative democracy. Democracy, it never goes fast, right? The crafting of legislation, the passing of bills, of laws, it is messy, it is sloppy, it is slow.
Corrupt.
And absolutely, with all the different PAC money and yes, it's absolutely corrupt. And that's just the way it is. I mean, our government, the way it's really formed is to be an incrementalist legislative body, meaning incrementalism. You move very, very slow. To get anything radical passed is nearly impossible unless Congress is responding to something, to a grave national situation. And, you know, to us sports fans, this is pretty important. Yeah. But in the grand scheme of things, it's not important. And, you know, what a representative say from Texas, where it's just, you know, a bottomless pit of money for these players, why would he want to advocate for guardrails? Because his fans, the fans of Texas, who are the voters of Texas, they don't want that.
Yeah.
His constituents, yeah, absolutely. And so it will be unpopular in some places. And it's, so I don't know. I mean, this is just a one tiny little meeting of a subcommittee in the House.
And it's also, by the way, trying to keep the government afloat.
Yes. Yes.
So, I mean, you can see how that ranks in priority.
And I think I'm sure that's what John McGarvey, the Kentucky representative, was saying, or what he was trying to say is, we got bigger fish to fry than this. Are we really going to waste our time trying to figure this mess out when the NCAA should do it? But the problem is the NCAA has no leadership. I mean, hey, the NCAA is a broken concept, a broken institution. And so I don't see how this is going to be resolved in the next few years. I really don't.
What they've done with this meeting is they've taken one step forward and eight steps back. You know, they made no progress. In fact, they put it in reverse.
Yeah.
And as much as we love college football, it is a very small fish here in all the things that our government, our nation, our citizens are having to deal with. But I got to backtrack, because I've made this statement many times before to players demanding $5,000 just to put their cleat on campus. I have always maintained and thought it was in place that players could not receive a nickel until they sign. And if they are getting money to visit, what do you go to five places? You make $25,000. The next month, you go to two or three more. You can't do that. And the NCAA can stop that, because the players should never receive any money until they're under a student athlete.
Oh, do you remember the law in Missouri that we talked about that they passed?
Oh, yeah.
If a kid in Missouri commits to Missouri, say when he's a sophomore, he can start receiving NIL money as a sophomore in high school. But it has to be a kid from Missouri, and only if he goes to Missouri. So they're incentivizing 16-year-olds to go to Missouri
and make money. Yeah.
And you know what? You know what? If you're a stud quarterback and you're 15 years old and Missouri offers you and you're from St. Louis, could you blame them for taking $500,000 a year? I mean, no.
Are they old enough to make that decision? Were you old enough? Yeah, you were. You're a money guy. But I don't think I was old enough or mature enough to handle $500,000 when I was.
No. I mean, no. My father would have taken care of that, as your father would have too.
That should not be an option. And the last time I brought this point up was when we talked about the Missouri deal. Until they're on campus and taking classes, they shouldn't get any quote NIL money. And as far as getting guardrails after this subcommittee meeting that you were talking about, I don't see that in my lifetime, to be honest with you. And I probably don't have as much left as a lot of people do, but I don't think it's happening. Here is something, though, that someone brought up when this NIL stuff first started getting chaotic. When Saturday night at 8 o'clock, you turn on the TV, or you're in Starkville, or you're at one of the many fabulous college football sites across our fabulous nation, do you think about it?
No.
Do you still love it?
Yes.
You know, it's our passion.
And last week was just such a great college football weekend. Saturday was incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. Florida State, Clemson going to overtime. Key game in Tuscaloosa, Ohio State, Notre Dame coming to the last play of the game from the 1 yard line, and Ohio State wins by about an inch. Love. I mean, just Colorado getting thumped by Oregon, Bo Nix, you know, just absolutely playing the best football of his life. Goes on and on, But, you know, I was just trying to think. Based on on-field performance, is there one team right now that is really benefiting from that? So it seems to be a bit of an outlier that's in the top 10. I mean, maybe Texas. But Texas, you figured that Sark was going to get Texas going anyway. And I think you could make the argument just based on recruiting rankings that it hasn't really impacted Alabama. I mean, Nick Saban, he said that in July 22, he said that Alabama players made $3 million via NIL. So it was a little over a year ago, but that seems like a really small number now. A really small number. I mean, I could envision some programs paying up to, what, $15 million a year?
You know, if they're not already, it's crazy.
And the thing is, there's no way to get the information. You can't put out a FOIA request as a reporter and force a private entity to turn over their tax records. You know, you can do that with a university because it's a public, but these collectives are private. So it's all going on behind closed doors.
It's a big pile of coat hangers, and I don't know if we can ever get them all in the closet. It's hard to understand, but again, we still love our college football. All right, speaking of football, let's talk pro football when we get back. A pretty big piece of news is coming out of not the NFL, but the other pro leagues, and we'll talk about that on the other side of the break. By the way, you're listening to Big Noon Sports, presented by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage.
...100.9 Tuscaloosa weather.
A warm afternoon, partly to mostly sunny with a high at 88. Clear tonight, the low 64. Tomorrow is sunny day, the high 87. And for the weekend, we stay warm and dry, sunny Saturday and Sunday. Highs between 86 and 89. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 76 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the plains. This is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
It is Big Noon Sports. Matt Coulter, along with Lars Anderson.
Just had a thought. I just had a thought. Caught on air. Yeah.
Obviously, but you need to share it. I mean, as long as you shared it with everybody else now. Never mind. Hey, listen.
Something about you, what you and I were just discussing off air. Sorry about that.
USFL, XFL, it's done. We've been hearing this, and I think once they started talking about it, I pretty much felt like it was going to happen. Just setting up the parameters was going to be the main focus. So they've announced it, but they didn't give us any of the parameters. Which, of course, if you're listening to Big Noon Sports based in the state of Alabama, you got to think that the Birmingham Stallions would be 1A and 1B. I mean, they've won back-to-back XFL championships, USFL championships, and I think they'd be first up. But I really don't know how they're going to divide these teams up. But I do know this. If you're coming out of the USFL, the Stallions have got to be there. And out of the XFL, St. Louis has got to be there. Did you know St. Louis drew like 30,000 people per game? That's pretty good.
Yeah.
J. McCarron was there, so maybe that had a lot to do with it.
And, all right, so just to, like, review here, the new USFL has been playing for two seasons. Last year, all of the teams were based in Birmingham. And the USFL played its second season with eight teams in four hub cities, Detroit, Canton, Ohio, Michigan, or Memphis, and Birmingham. Now, the reason that they were in those cities is because those cities do the best job of supporting the teams. So you would think at minimum, Detroit, Canton, Ohio, Memphis, Tennessee, and Birmingham will have teams in this new league. I think it's absolutely, you can almost write it in stone that Birmingham is going to have a team in this league just because of how, I mean, I would even think that if the NFL were ever to add two more teams, I think Birmingham would have to get consideration.
Really?
I really think so. Just because, look, week in and week out, you look at the TV ratings. I mean, Birmingham is number one or number two every single week for college football. It's right there with the NFL, too. It's not quite as high. And so the XFL came back for its third incarnation in 2023 with teams in eight different cities: Arlington, Texas, Houston, Texas, Las Vegas, Orlando, San Antonio, Seattle, St. Louis, and Washington. I think of those, you think either Arlington or Houston, probably Houston. I think Vegas, Orlando, probably not San Antonio. You'd want the Pacific Northwest presence, so I think Seattle and I think St. Louis and Washington. We'll see. And then another big question is, will these teams be affiliated with NFL teams the same way NFL Europe was? NFL Europe, you could, if you were affiliated, say, with the Scottish Claymores, you could send up to, I think, six guys to play on the Claymores during the spring, which is when NFL Europe played, and then it'd just be a way for them to improve. And you had quarterbacks like Kurt Warner, and several others who really they rapidly developed in NFL Europe because they got live playing time. It's hard to develop. It was sort of, especially if you're a late blooming sort of quarterback like Kurt Warner was, it's hard to develop if you're not playing. And so it really became what NFL Europe ultimately became was a developmental league, almost just for quarterbacks, but a lot of good players. We're talking Pro Bowl caliber players, guys who made the Pro Bowl and even became All Pro in some cases, came from NFL Europe. And so I'm guessing that that's what is going to happen, right? And these are practice squad players. These are guys just at the lower end of the roster, right? They're guys like, you know, say 40 to you know, 53. I think 50. Yeah. That's on the active. And now the practice squads have expanded. So I think practice squads are now like 16 or something. So it would be like 42 to, you know, 60 or whatever, or 65. Those would be where you'd pick the group of players to come from. But the thing is, if you're like a defensive lineman or an O lineman, or somebody where you're making a lot of hits all the time, it'd be tough to play in the spring on your body and then go straight into NFL training camp. And that's essentially what they're going to be doing. But I would suspect, again, just based on my own experience, right, as I embedded for a season with the Scottish Claymores over in Glasgow, that that the NFL is probably going to be behind this in some capacity. And then they would set up, again, sort of, it's like a, basically, like a, it would be like a farm league, right? Yeah. A farm system, which I think the NFL needs.
I do, too. And I think that both these leagues have proven that there is a want for spring football. Matter of fact, we proved that 40 years ago in Birmingham, Alabama, anyway. But I like it. I think it's a slam dunk for Birmingham. And, you know, we could pick a few other cities that I think will maintain their professional football team. But I think it's a great idea. And Birmingham really got behind their Stallions. And boy, did the Stallions get behind Birmingham. I mean, they won two. The first two championships came back to Birmingham. I thought that was very, very cool. And we'll see what happens moving forward. Do you just think real quick, how many teams, not where, but how many teams will this league make up?
Well, if it's going to be affiliated, if the NFL is going to be involved, the perfect number would be 16. Because there's 32 NFL teams. Yeah. Then two NFL teams could be tied to one team in this league. Do we know? Do they say what it's going to be called? I don't think they have.
No, but I've seen because of its branding, it should stay USFL. What's that, Justin?
From what I've been seeing around, I don't know if this is official or not. I've not verified it, but National Spring Football League, so NSFL.
Well, okay, so that leads me to believe that the NFL is going to be behind it.
Well, the NFL has been loosely related to both of these.
Well, that's definitely it then. If it's NFL, we're putting a S in there, you know? NFL, I'm surprised that hasn't leaked out yet.
I think a lot of people were taking guesses and that just fit. But
yeah. I'm reading now that a lot of people are making that assumption as NSFL and the name National Spring Football League have recently been trademarked. So people are assuming that that's what it's for.
Well, that would pretty much tell you what the name's going to be, wouldn't it? If they've applied for a trademark on it? I would think that would slam dunk it. But NSFL, do you like the sound of that?
Yeah, I do.
I kind of do, too. But I don't know. I haven't seen this in any type of copyright document or anything like that. Not that it would be.
You know how
I don't think they need to have the 16 teams. I just think that's too many. I would take half of them. I would take 8 and then grow.
And then have 3.
Warranted.
Yeah. And then if you did 8, then 3.
Then you have 4 teams.
3. My math is really good. But hey, I impressed you with my math yesterday. I did some complicated math in my head. And
it wasn't just the fact that you did it in your head. It was incredibly fast. Lars and I were at our favorite little place, Bob Howers in Vestavia. He just rattled off this math. I don't even remember what it was.
I know.
But,
it was
decimal points.
I was possessed there. It was my Rain Man moment, and that's about it.
You used it up because by the way, 8 times is 32.
Whenever I'm facing a problem, like I just have no solution to, it feels like I'm back in algebra 3 class, right? Or second level algebra 3-4, because I just absolutely cannot do math to save my life. I mean, it's like you're either a math person or a word person, and I'm obviously a word person. I am just terrible at math. I am terrible at math.
Lack of math. Well, as people know, my father was literally a rocket scientist, and C's were not allowed, much less B's in math.
Yeah.
But my mother was a linguist, so I kind of got the best of both worlds. I don't know how I worked out with them, but I think it's been okay for me. Hey, we're talking to Mick next.
That's right. Mick Gillespie is going to be joining us here in just a few minutes.
Hey, remember now, our promotion here on Tide 100.9, there in Tuscaloosa. I know we're on in East Alabama, too. But the code number this hour is 235. That means you go to the Tide 100.9 app, you enter that code, and who knows, you might win $30,000. Yes. $30,000. Again, that code is 235, and you're listening to Big Noon Sports presented by Haley's Hansing Union Home Mortgage.
For more Big Noon Sports coming up.
Hello, welcome back to the show. Justin Jones is the producer of this fine program. And Lars, just quick off-camera moment, off-mic moment. My cat just spilled an entire glass of water all over the kitchen floor.
What's your cat's name again?
Henry.
Henry.
After Aaron. Anyway. That's a good thing to bring Mick in because he's a baseball guy. Mick Gillespie joins us on Big Noon Sports. Hey, Mick, I'm an Aaron guy. I always have been in my life. Is he rank up there with you two? He might have been just a tad before your time. I don't remember.
You know what? I love Hank Aaron. One of the pieces of memorabilia that I ruined as a kid was I got a Hank Aaron giveaway bat that was like a full-size bat from a Braves game. All the signatures of the Braves that were on the team when he broke the record, And of course, I used it in a baseball game, and it got broken and ruined. But he's great. I mean, like, to be that consistent for that long, all the home runs, for all those years, not use steroids. Yeah, I love him. And I hate it when the Southern League left Mobile, because part of their stadium down there, Hank Aaron Stadium, which was named after him, was his childhood home. And, you know, his brother played in the big league too. So they had a lot of their memorabilia in there. And he's a big part of our state's history too. You know, very proud of Hank Aaron and everything that he went through, what he meant to the game and just what he meant to our country. So, yeah, I love him.
Mick, I read this story this morning and immediately thought of you. Last night, Braves beat the Cubs in 10 innings, 6-5. Game-winning run was preceded by a stolen base by Ronald Acuña Jr., put him in scoring position, and it was historic. It was his 70th stolen base of the season, making him the only player in Major League Baseball history to compile 40 home runs and 70 stolen bases in a single year. So, this milestone compelled the Braves to stop the game, allowed Acuña to receive an ovation from the fans, and he was able to get the second base, unhinge it from the ground and keep it, and then a montage of highlights. And here's where the controversy comes in. The Cubs broadcasters, John Sciambi, is that right, and Jim Deshays, they did not think that in-game celebration was appropriate. And one of them said, "We're really stopping the game to do a highlight montage?" So the ball is in your court. What do you think?
Especially since he's a Cubs guy.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, well, also, and I should say this, I interviewed for the job that John Schomp had. And also, for Cubs fans, a shameless plug on YouTube, Cubs Baseball Channel. I'm on there every day, including today, with videos. The reason why this one really was painful for us is that the Cubs need this game. They're in the wild card race. They're tied with the Marlins, but they don't win the tiebreaker, so they'd be out of the playoffs. We've blown back-to-back games against the Braves, and these are games that are crucial. And the Cubs made some trades at the deadline that are going to come back and hurt them. And if they don't make the playoffs, those trades were for nothing. So, you know, you're talking about rental guys. You're giving up Nelson Velazquez, who's on a home run pace like Mark McGwire right now with the Royals. And then DJ Hers, you don't know him yet, but you will. He'll be one of the starters in the rotation for the Nationals. So it wasn't a good trade unless you make the playoffs. But, I saw the game. We're blacked out. So I didn't get to listen to the Cubs like I normally do to be able to hear John and JD. I've worked with JD a long time, and I've known John a long time. I think it's a lot of it had to do with that. Now, the baseball fan in me, I grew up in Baltimore. I thought it was awesome when Cal Ripken Jr. had his historic moment. And we've always, stopped the game and recognized big, big moments that we may never see again, passing Lou Gehrig when Pete Rose got the all-time hit record, stopped the game. His parents are there. This is one of those records that Acuña's got. I don't think people realize how significant it is right now. I think in about, 25 years, you're like, there was a guy who did this and this and this. Unless this becomes something that's more of the regular, and the whole thing with the baseball is being a little juiced now, but I just feel like for the Cubs broadcast, which I would say our broadcast being a Cubs guy, they were just worried about the time that we weren't out there playing. And then, of course, we lost the game immediately. So I'm sure that had to do something. Maybe they could have waited until after the game. I don't know. But I see it both ways, kind of. I know I feel like that's a political answer, but that's just how I feel.
Well, I'll tell you what, Mick, this is a topic right in our ball yard. I don't like it. I'm a Braves fan. But the Cubs, like you said, the big difference here is playoffs, man. They're trying to make the darn playoffs, and you're going to take 15 minutes out of a game that's tied? I don't like it. I wouldn't like it, and I'm a huge Atlanta Braves fan. But do it after the game? And I understand this is a significant accomplishment. 70-40, 40-70 if you go home runs to stolen bases. That's a big deal. But sometimes, Mick, I feel like baseball and other sports included just find things to sell. I mean, how many extra base hits has Mazzuna had on Sundays where there was a full moon the night before? He now leads the league in that. I know that's a very bizarre example.
Right.
I think that sometimes we just stretch these records. And baseball is a stat sport, but they've gone way too crazy. Somebody explain OBS to me.
Percentage,
you know, I know. But what's the new one that combines your mother's age plus stolen bases and then sacrifice flies?
I started the Cubs baseball channel because I wanted to basically not discredit analytics, but I wanted to talk about the game without being so heavily reliant on analytics. And one of the guys who's on there with me, Tim Wilkins, was scouting director for the Cubs in Arizona, like special assistant there, Tampa Bay, years with the Blue Jays. And he's kind of been part of this movement in baseball where these guys have kind of been pushed out of the game. And I just think that this analytics craze, and you're talking about it, kind of, you know, the statistical part of it, where we're going to make up a stat that's like total bases and slugging percentage and average and on-base percentage. And here's a stat, you know, and it's like, nah, I'm going to stick with average home runs and RBIs. You know, that's kind of what I like, stolen bases. So I'm with you on that. And, yes, the stopping the game with an extra innings, I mean, they could have waited until, you know, one more batter, and they probably could have just done it then, the way the things turned out. But I don't know. The Braves are having a historic run right now. This is the best. This is the golden age of Braves baseball. And, you know, maybe they really don't care what the Cubs think.
Mick, let's switch sports here and move to Tuscaloosa. What was your takeaway from Alabama's 24-10 victory over Ole Miss on Saturday?
Well, we looked like Alabama football. I saw the beginning of our identity, the one that we lost. When we're figuring it out, I hope. I mean, it was only a half of football, but it was the type of football that I love. Defense, tackling, the secondary lockdown, the very talented Ole Miss wide receivers, Jackson Dart being rushed a lot on defense. After the first half where Jalen Milroe struggled a little bit, he found an identity. Hey, I'm just going to, you know, try to manage the game, take my shots when they're there. The offensive line run blocked, and it was the type of Alabama win when they were, like, you know, basically just falling over Ole Miss in the fourth quarter that we've been waiting for. There's still some issues. First off, Milroe, you can't make the interception. But to me, and this is so weird to talk about, but the biggest problem I have is with Seth McLaughlin and the bad snap. And if it's something that he can't get together, then maybe, you know, Brockermeyer can come in and snap the ball. And maybe you lose experience, and maybe you lose the other things that McLaughlin does. But as a quarterback, which I do a show, you guys, I talk about it every week on Roll Tide Pod's Elephant in the Room. The room's my studio. It's Jake Coker. You know, he's like, hey, Jimbo Fisher's like, he said it over and over. You can't drive a car with your head down, and you can't quarterback with your head down. But when the snaps are either keeping your head down or when you're in the goal line and the guy's snapping it over your head, it's hard to win football games like that. And so I think that's something one way or the other has to be corrected. So if it's a Chuck Knoblauch thing or, you know, he's got the yips, the next guy, next man up, we've got to be we've got to make every single position on the field one that if you're not getting it done, someone else is coming in. And for Milroe, seeing some big improvement, but the snaps have to get better. And then the other concern was, you know, Deontay Lawson going down on defense, big linebacker, a really smart player, helps everybody get in position. But Jaheed Campbell and Trez Marshall came over for this, you know? He wasn't getting on the field with Georgia. I didn't really notice a difference in that game. That could be different this week because as a guy who's had a high ankle sprain, it feels like a broken leg. And I don't think he's going to be back, even with all the modern technology, for a few weeks at least. And so those guys are going to have to step up, but I believe they will.
Can you hang on?
Sure.
I want to talk defense because, man, that is something you can talk about for the length of the show and then some, because they really have played well most of the year. All right. We are bringing you Big Noon Sports. Hey, don't forget tomorrow our show is live from Innisfree. You ever been there, Mick?
Oh, yeah. Like they keep my Yingling cold on ice.
Yeah. It's a great Irish pub right there in Tuscaloosa. So make sure and join us tomorrow for a beer and some lunch. In the meantime, let's take a break, get back, talk about Kool-Aid and others on Big Noon Sports. Presented by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage.
Go inside the Alabama Crimson Tide with the Gary Harris Show.
Hey, everybody, it's Gary Harris. Coming up Friday, it's a TGIF edition of the Gary Harris Show at 9 a.m. We'll have Adam Amin from Fox Sports. Also, of course, we'll have our Bama football trivia giveaway. We're going to give away another great prize from T-Town Menswear and T-Town Gallery in the University Mall. My SEC point spread predictions and more. That's Friday on the Gary Harris Show.
Catch the Gary Harris Show Monday through Friday, 9 to 11 a.m. on Tide 100.9 and Tide100.9.com.
Looking for Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather. A warm afternoon, partly to mostly sunny with a high at 88. Clear tonight, the low 64. Tomorrow is sunny day, the high 87. And for the weekend, we stay warm and dry, sunny Saturday and Sunday. Highs between 86 and 89. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 75 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
This is the Big Noon Sports Network.
Mick Gillespie is our guest on Big Noon Sports, presented by Haley Sansing Union Home Mortgage. Mick, I don't know where to pick it up, because you could just single out so many individuals in this group team effort on defense, but you know, a lot of criticism and noted as far as the offense is concerned. But defensively, Alabama's been pretty darn solid all year. And they gave up 34 to Texas, but the offense helped them out a lot in that. So could this be an 09 type defense?
Yeah, look, if they had done a better job of getting the play calls in, Texas wouldn't have scored 34. I'd love to see a rematch now that you got, as Lane Kiffin called them, T-Rob, Mr. Various Robinson, basically communicating the plays to the defense. So Nick Saban made an adjustment, and I got to tell Lane Kiffin, thank you for the assist here. You know, you always need a villain to bring everyone together, and he did such a wonderful job of that with all the trolling last week. It's been a lot quieter playing against Mississippi State. A team that I would consider closer to a rival than Ole Miss, by the way. But, yeah, so I feel like that was a big part of it, because how many times were they standing on the, you know, by the line of scrimmage looking back on what are we supposed to do here? And teams want to go fast, and they made an adjustment, and I think that Ole Miss's offense is as good as Texas, but they weren't as good against Alabama on Saturday. And, I mean, like you talk about, like, Dallas Turner, you know, all the sacks and you know, like Nick Saban said, maybe more important is just disrupting the play. You know, I mean, you don't even get a stat for it. You're just back there forcing the quarterback to throw the ball. And when you have a secondary like Alabama and a Malachi Moore floating around in the middle, I mean, bad things are going to happen for an offense if you don't have time in the pocket with this defense and what they're able to do.
Mick, I want to go back to the quarterback situation. Just in total here, how do you think Nick Saban has managed it? Do you think it's been, I think he's done sort of pushing the right buttons? Just your assessment when you step back and kind of look at, you know, all the way from game one through Texas, through South Florida, and then Ole Miss.
Well, I think that it's That's going to be crazy now. Probably the only person who's going to say this. I think that it's Jalen Milroe and Dylan Lautergan. Then Ty Simpson and that Tyler Booker probably ought to go somewhere else. That's what I think. With a wink. You know, the guys have had an opportunity to get out there. We know what they can do. Part of the job is being able to have poise under pressure. But there's an it factor with this job, too. And, you know, you look at Tom Brady, who's the best ever. I remember watching Tom Brady rip apart our offense in the 2000 Orange Bowl when we had a 21-point lead. And just watching him methodically move the ball down the field and just kind of have like a poise under pressure. You know, you got to have that. And I feel like the next guy is going to be Lautergan. So we'll see what happens with that. But I thought that Nick Saban did what you have to do in a situation like this when you don't have a clear front runner. Milroe's not perfect. I mean, we know that. They've got a basically make the offense around his skill set, which might be one read, two read, run. He doesn't need to be back there trying to read defense. Just 1-2 go. Run the ball. You know, have plays that are set up to go quick. You know, like we always used to, like the wide receiver screen where the wide receivers would block, you get the ball to the outside. It's almost like a running play, which ironically, playing against Mississippi State and maybe the best ever at, you know, an option-style passing attack, right, was Mike Leach. But I feel like with his skill set and his ability to run and his athleticism and his likability, I think the guys like him a lot too. You know where his weaknesses are, so don't put him in a position to be in that spot where he's, you know, trying to read defenses. And then maybe as he progresses and gets more experience, you gradually build the game plan around that because he's going to get better at it, but it's tough. It's a big jump from high school to college. But I'd say that Alabama handled the quarterback situation. I'm not complaining at all. And I think that that the future right now for Alabama, if something were to happen to Milroe, would be Lauderdale.
Many of our Alabama-related guests are brought to you by Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama broker, Advantage Realty Group. Remember that. Write it down. Put it in your phone, whatever the case may be. Hey, what do you know about Mississippi State? You know, without Leach, you know, with Leach, you always know what you're going to get. A very pass-oriented offense and a defense that's about average. What are we getting out of the Bulldogs this year?
Well, I'll start with this. I know he wasn't Alabama's head coach, but I loved him. Loved him, loved his personality, what he brought to the game, the genuineness. He didn't take himself so seriously. You know, sometimes I feel like we these coaches become such celebrities that they forget that, hey, guess what? You're coaching a football team. You know, you're not splitting atoms. You're not getting a rocket into space. You know, treat people the way that Mike Leach treats them. And if everybody went to their job every day and treated the people around them like he did, I think we'd have a better world. I even went down to Key West and went to Captain Tony in his honor. Probably do the same thing this year for Jimmy Buffett, an excuse to get down to the islands. But that's where he lived in the offseason, and that's where he went. And they even had a chair and a beer out there for him. But they have absolutely, football-wise, with Zach Arnett, changed their offense. They got rid of Mike Leach's air attack guys. They're going to a pro set. It's been a slow transition. I kept hearing rumblings that Mike Leach was actually thinking about retiring anyway. And then obviously the tragic heart attack. I don't know that he was going to retire this year, but I think he was kind of like looking at saying, hey, you know, health-wise, there were some issues and that, you know, Arnett would be the guy that he felt like would take over. They felt like they liked him. They got their, you know, they got run over by LSU and then played a pretty good game against South Carolina. They didn't win, but they started to move the ball on offense. You got a lot of guys back. I mean, Will Rogers, who has a ton of experience, hasn't had much success against Alabama, ironically, but some receivers, they can run the ball. There's a lot of threats there. It's not like a normal Mississippi State team to me, because State's always been kind of built on defense. But it's been, you know, Arnett, who was the defensive coordinator, and his defense that have not really showed up this year. The offense has actually been, you know, was okay last week. So that's kind of what we're looking at right now. I'm a little concerned about two things for Alabama. First off, they have struggled on the road. And one of the reasons that they've struggled on the road is that they haven't started fast, which is something that Nick Saban kind of made his career on at Alabama, that in the fourth quarter, and they've struggled in the fourth quarter on the road. So they want to get back to joyless murder ball, as they say. We'll see if they're capable of doing that. But this is a good place for them to do it. And then the other thing is, I think Mississippi State is starting to figure out their offense. They did against South Carolina last week. They didn't win, but they scored some points. So, you know, we'll see if maybe they're doing stuff now with a quarterback with a ton of experience that Alabama hasn't seen on film. But I think if Alabama does the things that they did in the second half against Ole Miss, we might see some joyless murder ball.
Mick, really quick, other than quarterback, what position group are you particularly interested in watching on Saturday and see how they perform?
Well, I mean, I'm still looking at that defensive line. I want to see a pass rush. You know, Dallas Turner's been so good. Jaheim Otis, you know, when he's healthy, he gets a push. Because I think that if they continue to get pressure on the quarterback, that this team's going to get better and better. And you talk about like the 09 defense, 92 defense, some of the best 2011, wasn't that it? The 2011 team that beat LSU, where they didn't get the ball past midfield. Those teams had great defenses. And I think that's what Alabama's going to have to get to where we want them to get to this year. And that's to the college football playoff. And I want them to beat Georgia and win it all. So the only way they're going to do that to me is defense. First.
Hey, Mick, tell everybody where they can listen and find you and read about you.
Yeah, hey, on YouTube, Bama Tailgate, that's my YouTube channel. Got shows on there every Friday night. We're on the radio around the state as you're driving in, normally in the morning. And then if you're a baseball fan, the Cubs baseball channel on YouTube. And then I'm on Roll Tide. I'm everywhere on YouTube. Roll Tide Pod with the Disrupt Media guy, Jake Coker, and I. Twice a week, two shows. We got Ryan Anderson coming on with us for today's show. So that's on YouTube as well. I'm a YouTube sensation. Well, I try.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. All right, Mick, have a great afternoon, and we'll see you down the line for certain. Thank you, sir.
Roll Tide.
Thank you, Mick.
All right. What did he say a couple of weeks ago? If it's good for Nick, it's good for Mick. All right. Hey, let's talk some Talladega. The president of the Talladega Super Speedway, Brian Crichton, will join us on the other side of this break. It's halftime on Big Noon Sports.
It's the Tide 100.9 30K Workday Payday. Woo! Win cash every weekday 8 to 5. Here's this hour's cash code.
809. Again, that's 809. The code is 809.
Enter that code now on the Tide 100.9 app. Click on the 30K payday button and enter the code for a chance to win $30,000.
Covering SEC sports like kudzu on the roadside. This is Big Noon Sports.
Great conversation with Mick Gillespie. The Mixter was with us at the very end of last hour. It is the second hour of Big Noon Sports. And again, both are presented by Haley Sansing Union Home Mortgage. We're going to talk some Talladega here in just a minute. But Lars, I thought that, first of all, real kudos for you keeping up with the Braves and what was going on last night. I appreciate that very much. Nobody ever asked you. How do you feel about what they did and breaking into an extra innings game as they did to present Ronald Acuña Jr. with a base?
I think it was inappropriate given the context. If it was a game in, July and similar situation, then no problem. But this is a team fighting for its playoff life, so to speak. And you can't do that, because it changes the dynamic of the game. It changes the rhythm of it. And, I'm with the Cubs broadcasting team. And I know that they got lit up by Atlanta fans on social media, but I really think that it was not the right thing to do. Just wait till after the game. Second base isn't going anywhere, you know?
Well, I don't know. People are trying to steal them all the time. Oh, God. I can't believe that was so lame. I agree with you guys. Do you know a bigger Braves fan than me?
I do not.
Yeah, I love him, man. I love Acuna Jr. When he first came up, he was a little saucy. But he's one you can't name him and other players without saying they're the best in the game right now. All right, let's take our next guest, Brian Crichton, president of the Talladega Super Speedway, who has managed to find a couple of minutes for us, because I imagine you're not busy at all right now, Brian. It's just 2 days before race weekend, and Sunday you got the Yellowwood 500. So how's your day?
You know, my alarm clock just went off at 1 o'clock, so I just climbed out of bed. So just looking at the racetrack and seeing what's going on now.
Hey, every year y'all do something with the facility, or you do something with seating, or you do something with special ticket prices. What do you have going on for this weekend? Or what have you changed?
Well, we brought back the rodeo. So the rodeo is quickly becoming a fall tradition here at Talladega Super Speedway. So tomorrow night, Friday night, we've got the Buckendega Bronco ride. It's happening inside of our infield, so it's going to be a big show. We've got Hardy coming in on Saturday night, so our traditional infield concert is Hardy this go around. Club 212 is a new offering that we had. We actually had that. It's new for this fall, too. So that's the old press box that we converted into a club right in the middle of the tri-oval. And just lots of different activities going on. The display area continues to grow. We've got about 30 partners. NASCAR Experience is back out there. We have a kid zone out there. Talladega Garage Experience. We continue to add more activities and driver meet and greets in there. And so it's just we're always building out here at Talladega.
Brian, what kind of a crowd are you expecting for the race?
Big. Ever since we got through COVID, every single race we've seen growth. So we've already sold out of our infield of all 2,700 RV spots. Ticket sales are trending higher than they did last fall, and also higher than they did this past April. Talladega Garage Experience is the same way. Every single suite that we have in this place is sold out for both Saturday and Sunday as well. Outside camping is up. I've been amazed at the we loaded our infield yesterday. The amount of campers that we had pre-stage just waiting to get into the infield. It's going to be a beautiful weekend. The weather is spot on. I like to say it's great racing weather during the day and great campfire weather at night. So sitting around that campfire with friends, it's going to be a huge weekend and excitement in NASCAR, and just as the each event's continuing to grow. So we're excited.
Brian Crichton, president of Talladega Super Speedway, is our guest on Big Noon Sports. Brian, how much camping ground do you have?
So total acres we have out here is about 2,700 total acres. To give you an idea, the infield, as I mentioned earlier, we have about 2,700 lined out reserved RV spaces. We also have two areas for camping. That our infield is so large, you can fit all SEC football stadiums into our infield. So we actually have a graphic that shows every single football stadium in our infield. We actually have space, too. So next year, when they add two more, we can get those two in our infield as well. So it just gives you an idea of how big this facility is.
It's absolutely incredible, having been there a few times myself. Do you like the positioning that the track is now, and as far as the points championship is concerned? It's been that way a couple of years now.
Yeah, I love being a part of the second round. You know, we still have 12 drivers that are rolling into Talladega. You know, right now only one is maybe rolling in with a little bit of confidence or, you know, a little bit of swagger, you know, after winning the race last weekend. So he, you know, knows he's on to the next round. But, you know, those other 11 drivers, they're all, you know, you win here, you punch your ticket, you know, to the next round. And so, as everybody knows, it's kind of that wild card race. And so anybody can win. So I think everybody's going to be positioning themselves to try to get up front. You know, you can be in the front, you can be in the middle, you can sometimes even be in the back, but you just don't want to be caught in the big one. But you know, I love the spot that we're in just because of the excitement and, you know, that kind of ramps up. And then having the Roval right after us too, that's kind of a wild card as well. And so I think that makes Talladega even that much more important, and the, you know, the excitement ramps up that much more.
Brian, for those listeners who aren't as familiar with NASCAR as we are, can you just give a brief overview of the playoffs so far and kind of, you know, who has really showed some dominance and who needs a really good outing this weekend?
Yeah, absolutely. So the playoffs, so we have two different playoff races this weekend. We got the Craftsman Truck Series on Saturday, and they have 8 drivers that are in their playoff rounds. And then the Cup Series on Sunday, they still have 12. So they're rolling in with 12 drivers that are still eligible for, you know, moving on. Now, you know, of course, William Byron won last weekend at Texas, and so he's automatically into the round of 8, which starts in 2 weeks from now. You know, there's others that are strong. You know, Martin Truex Jr. with, you know, the points that he was able to collect all through the season, you know, he's been able to move into this round. And, you know, he needs good outings this weekend, and then, you know, the Roval as well to be able to move on. But he's kind of banked up some of those points, which is good for him. You know, one of those drivers that I think has got a shot here and, you know, has got to do really well to move on to the next round is going to be Ryan Blaney. You know, Ryan Blaney is, you know, has kind of gone a little bit quiet since his win, kind of in the middle of the season. But he's always run good at the super speedways. You know, Ford has run strong at the super speedways as well. So, you know, Joey Logano, his teammate, unfortunately didn't make it into this round. But I see that, you know, maybe Joey's going to help him a little bit, help Ryan a little bit, try to get up there and try to punch his ticket to the next round, because I really think Ryan's going to need to, you know, win one of the next two races to continue to move on.
Yeah, they do very well at Talladega. Before we let you go, tell folks how they can get tickets to the weekend.
Yeah, my favorite thing is going to our website, which is TalladegaSuperspeedway.com. Gives you all the different information that you need. Schedules about the rodeo, about Hardy, you know, the display, when gates open, but then also how to buy tickets, and it's a real easy ticket purchase process. It has information about camping as well. So to go to TalladegaSuperspeedway.com, or if you'd like to talk to a representative, we have them standing by at 877-GO-2, and that's the number 2, Dega. 877-GO-2-DEGA.
Looking forward to the weekend. I'll probably see you in a couple hours. Thanks, Brian.
Hey, you guys, shake and bake.
Nice. Hey, before we break, Justin, do you want to play that clip real quick from Nick Saban being on the Pat McAfee show today, just a few minutes ago?
I'm going to need like 2 minutes for that.
Okay, and we can no problem. Come back to it. Okay. Well, on the other side, we're going to talk to Rick Carley, TV legend here in Alabama. Lee Thompson is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high.
I have Rick.
And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker
who's as roll-tied as Houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at lauralee@thebamabroker.com. That's lauralee@thebamabroker.com.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A warm afternoon, partly to mostly sunny with a high at 88. Clear tonight, the low 64. Tomorrow a sunny day, the high 87. And for the weekend, we stay warm and dry, sunny Saturday and Sunday. Highs between 86 and 89. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 77 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The best sports talk in Alabama. This is Big Noon Sports.
Hey, you just heard James Spann, the weatherman. 77 degrees just a day or so ago. We were touching 90. Now, now it is just like it's like San Diego. All right. Our next guest is the one and only Rick Carley, a longtime sportscaster. Now he is a news anchor in the mornings for NBC 13. We appreciate him joining us to talk sports and all. Ricky, it's Matt and Lars. How are you?
Good. How are you guys? Good. Good. You know, you wouldn't recognize Channel 13 from when you worked there, Matt. You know, they redone the whole thing, so it's really cool. So, I was just getting in my car thinking, yeah, Coulter used to work up here. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I had like 12 years up there. I enjoyed it very, very much.
Did you
much.
Really? Wow.
But, yeah. Yeah, I was there before you got here. In fact, Ricky, we met Daytona. We met at Daytona when you were at Jackson.
Oh, did we? Okay.
I think so. Because we were cooling and using satellite, well, the one satellite truck in the world. We all used it. You remember that?
Sure.
Yeah. Matt, cool. I'm guessing you didn't do the 4 to 7 news in the morning.
No, Matt, but I did see, Matt, drive Matt was for a, 20 years.
Yeah,
radio.
Yeah, but see, Matt was smart. So when did you have to get up for a radio show? About 4 or 5? Or?
Yeah, 4:30, something like that. Yeah, I always try to get there an hour before airtime, but not like you. Sure. What do you get up at 2:15? Is that what you said?
2:15. I look at my phone till 2:30. Take a shower, shave. I grab a cup of tea. I'm out the door at 3:00. I get to the station at 3:15. I do about 4 radio stations real quick with news reports, dab on some makeup at 10 to 4 and do 3 hours. And it's really weird because, you know, for 39 years, it's the opposite. As a sports guy, you go in and you're writing scripts and editing and running around and you're doing, the stuff on TV is the last thing you do. And now it's kind of the first thing you do. So, but it's good. Those guys are awesome at 13. They got everything. It's like, Mr. Carley, here's your scripts. I mean, it's like big time. I mean, so it's really good. Had a good time over there, for sure.
This might be a really naive question, but you get more eyeballs on you when you do mornings, right, as opposed to evenings?
Well, you know, I don't know. Matt can probably chip in on this. I think that over the years, you know, down through the years, the evening news is always, you know, your top anchors are the 6 and the 11 at Eastern time or the 5, 6, and 10. But now, of course, maybe it's because I'm a morning guy, I think the morning shows have become possibly more important in some markets and certainly on par with the evening shows because I really think a lot of people, you can argue the more people are watching in the morning as they get ready for work. So, you know, people are coming home, they're looking at their phones, they're looking at Netflix or watching Yellowstone or something. So it just depends on what market you're in, I think.
It's become profitable. That's why everybody's doing morning news and morning shows and morning talk shows.
Right.
And this and that, because they can sell it. And especially, not to bring up your competition, but I went to see Rob Martin at 42 a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I was amazed at how much is focused on digital. Y'all are the same way too, aren't you?
That's unreal. You know, 10, 20 years ago, it was all TV. You know, I do my 5, 6, and 10, and then we did 5, 6, 9. I did like 4 sports guests a night on Fox 6 for like 30 years. And then digital comes, and now it's like, I say my work is probably, it could be 60-40 digital. I mean, they want you, you know, they want you on Facebook, on the web, on Instagram, on, you know, just everything, and on Twitter, and, you know, yeah, it's a whole different ball game. So I've had to, you know, a lot of people, you've had to reinvent yourself a little bit on how you do things, for sure.
Rick, I'm really glad you mentioned that because I wanted to bring it up. I think you and James Spann absolutely do social and digital better than anyone else in this state. Let's pretend you're talking to my class. What tips would you give people about how to sort of maximize and grow your audience on social?
Yeah. Well, I'm being an older guy. I'm 65 now, so I'm not a spring chicken. So, you know, Facebook is still tenfold more important in the news business than TikTok or Twitter or Instagram. And on the young people, they don't even know what Facebook is. You know, that's what old people use. But as far as penetration, as far as getting numbers, Facebook is the king. So I've concentrated on Facebook, and I would tell your kids, look, if whatever you're on, Twitter, whatever, and especially in this day and age, it's a lot about look at me, look at me, look at I'm a, you know, the hot looking news anchor, or I'm the guy, and it's all about what I do on Facebook and social. I write about other people because, quite frankly, nobody wants to know about me. Now, I wrote about that, and I wrote about my dog yesterday. I think I wrote about my son this morning because it's National Sons Day. But usually I write about other people. I talked to Jalen Milroe's dad this morning, Quint, about his, you know, the servant's heart of his son. And I wrote about Jalen and how, you know, his kindness and his compassion that he showed when he wasn't playing against South Florida could have parlayed it into a starting bid again for him. So, you know, I think that a Span is like that, too. You know, he'll go to a classroom and throw, you know, show birthday parties. Not a lot about James, you know, and once a month he might get on his horse and say something. But that's my key for your kids. And then learn how to do everything. Learn how to post video, learn how to write. Learn how to write well, and then just be yourself. And just like I tell my kids, you know, my son's 25, my daughter's 22. She just moved to L.A. She's trying to chase the dream in film production. She's in Beverly Hills now. My son's in the Peace Corps halfway around the world. And I tell them just, you know, it's not so much about you, man. It's about other people. So that's what I tell your kids, I think.
Excellent.
Wow. What great advice. I took notes, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, Span, you know, Span is real good at that. Now, Span, you know, Span is also, I kind of, he's not the Walmart, but the Walmart of posters, I mean that he has everything. You know, Walmart, you can get a quart of milk and a fishing pole. You know what I mean? And he, with Span, you know, he'll post everything, a sunset from Nebraska. And then he'll have a birthday cake from Coleman. And then he'll post something from Canada. And, I mean, he's really gone world. He's about to hit 1 million followers on Facebook. And he's probably the number one social media guy in America. Now, that said, I'm at about 300,000. And I think my reach last month was like 18 million. And wow. that's really one of the top.
Monetize that. Yeah. You've got to monetize that now, Ricky.
You know what? Yeah, I can't while I'm working. Maybe when I'm old and gray and retiring.
Yeah.
The crazies will come out, right? And James will post a rainbow and you'll get criticized for it. I love it when James gets fired up and goes after people.
He does, though. Yeah, or he'll post a nasty post and he'll say, well, thank you, sir. Yeah, he's really funny. Yeah. So, no, that's what we've done. I think we've both written about other people. And, you know, I think you've got a couple, not to toot my own horn, but you got a couple local anchors here in this market are among the top in the nation, which is pretty impressive for Birmingham, Alabama.
James is a big Instagram guy, I think.
He is. Yeah, he does everything. I think he sets up. Yeah, he's in everything. He has a thing on. He's got like tweet that set up. So if he gets a sunset from Texas, he just boom hits a button and they go to all four things. Where me, I'm less, you know, he'll post between 40 and 70 posts on Facebook a day, or I'll post like six or seven. So I'll get a lot more per post, you know, but he'll get, like I say, the Walmart, he blankets, you know, the country so well. But boy, he's good at what he does for sure.
Yeah, darn good fella, too. We've both known him for quite a long time. So is Lars. Lars is working with him on a couple of projects as well. We'll put TV and social media aside. Let's talk a little college football. Just give me Rick Carley's view on what happened in the second half of Bryant-Denny Stadium last Saturday afternoon.
Well, you know, I think Alabama football was back, and you know, it's the old Bear Bryant, Nick Saban, we know, smash mouth football, and they've kind of returned. And, you know, am I right in saying they had like 9 negative plays in the first half? I mean, it was like the Keystone Cops. And I know if you're a Bama fan, you're sitting on your hands, you're thinking, run the ball, show some, you know, come on, where's the offensive line? And so I think they returned to that. I bet you they went in the locker room and Coach Saban said, look at Tommy, we're just better physically. We got all these fives, so we're a better football team. Let's just blow them out. And they did. And, you know, I think the defense looked pretty good. And like I wrote on Facebook last Saturday, you know, the player that Bama's probably most grateful to have over the past 20 years is Will Reichert. You know, they don't want to let him go. But yeah, I think they just returned to more fundamental football because certainly even as a so-called unbiased sportscaster, it was kind of frustrating to watch for sure.
So, Rick, you're like me in that not in the room every day covering Alabama football and going to the press conferences. But we have been observing Nick Saban, you know, very closely for a long time. What is your takeaway from just what you're seeing from Coach Saban? Do you think, you know, he's still got a couple more years? It's like he had he was unusually warm, like in the first, like during camp and maybe the first week or so, 2 weeks of the season. And now, just this last week, there seems to be a little bit of an edge to him and an edge to his voice. And it's like, okay, it's go time for Nick Saban.
Yeah. It's funny. I saw on Twitter somebody posted after the game said, I want the cranky Nick Saban back. That's kind of the feeling of a lot of Bama fans. Look, I think being a grandfather has softened him a little bit. I mean, he's shown his kind heart a little bit. You know, he's always had a kind heart. It's just it's been hard to get to at times. You know, you get him in that football arena, and he's a very tough guy. But you know, you get the grandchildren now, granddaughter and grandson, and you know, he actually took some time to take a trip to Europe, and I think Miss Terry very much is probably telling him, look at. You know, you got to settle down. You're gonna keel over here. So he has done that. But I think on the football field, we were talking to somebody in the newsroom the other day, a big Bama guy. He said, I don't know, Saban's about to go. I said, geez, you lose one game, you're ready to jump off the cliff, you know. But I said, who are you going to get? I said, you're going to get Lane Kiffin all of a sudden. Suddenly doesn't seem like the guy. I mean, Dabo Sweeney suddenly doesn't seem like the guy. And I love Dabo. I've known him for 30 years. But, you know, Who's better in America than right now than the coach of your football team, than Nick Saban? I don't think there's anybody. I mean, who's better than Nick Saban? So I think that how many years does he have? He leads when he wants to, but you got to trust him when he says that when he will know it's time when he doesn't have the passion or he feels he's ready to program. And hopefully for Bama fans, that'll be many years from now.
Hey Ricky, can you hang on through the break?
Yeah, my cell phone's about to die, so if I die, I apologize to all your listeners. I'm just a clue. I'll blame it on my old iPhone 13.
No, you know, it was my fault too. I wasn't clear in my communication over text, so I apologize.
Wild goose chase.
I know. I'm a horrible person. I feel really bad.
Well, I'll tell you, the TV room I'm sitting in with this big white couch is pretty sweet. That's all I'm saying.
So, okay, I know where you are now. All right.
I'm right here.
All right, we'll be back with more Rick Carley in a second. You're listening to Big Noon Sports, presented by Eddie's Hansing Union Home Mortgage. And remember, this hour's code, go to the app, Tide 100.9 is 809.
Built to win.
Ball game, Alabama wins.
Built for championships.
Heading for the pylon. Get the race. Wins the race. Touchdown, Alabama.
Built by Bama. The
Crimson Tide play here. Join us Saturday as the Crimson Tide head to Starkville to battle Mississippi State. Our coverage begins at 5 on your home for Alabama football.
Brought to you by Birmingham Racecourse. BirminghamRacecourse.com. You can be a winner too.
Ha!
From T-Town to the Plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Well, you know, first of all, you know, what I said in the beginning, we have to build on the fact that we have to get better execution on a more consistent basis. And this team is a pressure team. On defense, they're pressuring all the time. They blitz all the time. They've got a lot of different looks. They do a lot of different things. So execution becomes even more important. Because they're going to try to give you bad plays. You got to minimize that. And then you got to take advantage of explosive plays when you get the opportunity to do it. And this team really, to me, is better than all the teams that we played so far, except Texas, in terms of the caliber of players, how they play, how tough they are, how physical they play. We're playing an SEC game on the road in a tough place to play. So this is not anything that requires any kind of a mental letdown. This is a build on the second half of what we did last week and understand why we did it and be able to continue to do it and not get frustrated in this game because of what might happen, because they're going to create some plays, but we can't get frustrated. We got to keep playing the next play. We got to play for 60 minutes, and that's what it's going to take in this game because they're a physical team. They're a good team. I mean, South Carolina game, they turned the ball over a couple times down the red zone, or that's a different game. So this is a good team.
You gonna have cowbells at practice all week? Is that what we've been doing?
Noise is noise. You know, we can't manufacture the cowbells, but we can't make noise.
That's Nick Saban on the Pat McAfee Show, which he has agreed to do. Hey guys, how much money do you think they're paying him?
You mean coach or McAfee?
$35 million, but
oh my lord,
that's crazy. But I would imagine he's getting some kind of stipend to do that every week. Of course, I questioned it at first, and I said, Matt, who does Pat McAfee appeal to? Young people. End of story.
His show is really good. It's really good. It's interesting though, Rick, that they cuss. You can every cuss word under the sun is there on ESPN on his show. What do you think about his show?
You know, I think it's good. I think it, you know, you get what you get, you know, when you're going in. I mean, his energy level is incredible. I mean, I think he has good guests. He doesn't shy away from asking tough questions. You know, he asked Coach about Miller's benching and all that to last week, I think it was. And, you know, I like him. I'm still kind of getting used to him on game day, though. You know, I think Pollock's a great guy, and I love that chemistry and the professionalism that Reese Davis brought. And not that Pat is not professional, but it's just different. But you're right. I mean, you guys nailed it. They're gunning for the younger people and, you know, who watches college football, young people. So, it's not brain surgery when it comes to being a TV executive. You follow the money and the demos, and you put the talent on set that appeals to younger folks.
I just feel like he's a little bit on the crude side, but then again, I throw kids out of my front yard. So, hey. hey, Ricky, before we let you go, give us a comment or two on Auburn. And I have a feeling that we're not seeing Auburn as they will be in a year or two under Hugh Freeze.
Yeah, I mean, he's got some recruiting to do. He's got, you know, the big thing about them has been, and correct me if I'm wrong, is one of the knocks is player development. You know, they would get these players in, 3 stars, 4 stars, a couple 5 stars, and they didn't develop them as well as perhaps they should have. And I think Freeze is very much into that. And I'm not saying he's in Coach Saban's head at all, but he knows that he can be Coach Saban, and so do the Auburn folks too. You know, I got a real different feel for a game a couple weeks ago. The place was sold out early in the season. I like what he's doing with the two quarterbacks, you know, with Thorne and Robbie Ashford. And, you know, and quite frankly, I told someone, I wonder why, again, I'm not the coach at Alabama, but I wonder why, if Coach Saban would ever consider doing that. You know, a Ty Simpson, Jalen Milroe package, like a Thorne and Ashford, and just two completely different looks, bring them in. But I like what's happening at Auburn. I like the feel of it. I think there's a new kind of attitude down there. And, yeah, I think they're ready to go. But you, like you said, man, you got to give them a couple years, I think, before they, you know, are competing for 1-2 in the SEC West.
Rick, I got to ask you about Taylor Swift and the Taylor Swift effect. Travis Kelce, you know, now I'm sure you've been following this, right? That they're allegedly dating. I mean, I guess there could be this conspiracy thing that this whole thing is a charade to increase Travis Kelce's brand, but it's off the charts. He's gained like 450,000 to 500,000 followers on social. Jeez. And I really think that this Kansas City Jets game on Sunday night, even though it's a dud of a game, will be the highest rated NFL game in a long time, because you're going to have millions and millions of Swifties tuning in. And I was at a softball practice, my girls' softball practice the other day. And as a huge Taylor Swift fan came up to me, and you know, she knows that I'm in the sports world. She's like, "Do you think Taylor Swift is going to show up to watch Kelce at the Mets game?" I'm like, "Oh God!"
Sounds like my wife. my wife will sit down 5 minutes before the Super Bowl and say, "Now who's playing?" But look, yeah, this thing is certainly this is. And I commented on the news. We had a promo, you know, the game's on the Channel 15 this weekend. And they had the NBC put up the big graphic, and they did it on the Today Show. And they had the two star players, and then they, you know, see them, Chiefs, Jets. Well, they didn't have a picture of Mahomes. They had a picture of Kelce. And I mean, when you're putting Kelce up there instead of the NFL's MVP to promote the game, I mean, there's some smart executives at the network, you know, because they know they're riding it. This is a hilarious story about Taylor Swift. So, yeah, I couldn't name one song she sings. I don't. I mean, she's just fantastic. Oh, by the way, real quick story about Dollar Bill Lawson, Matt, before I leave you on Taylor Swift. But my wife and my takes my daughter a couple years ago to a Taylor Swift concert at Bridgestone Arena in Nashville. So this is when I was at Channel 6. I'm writing scripts for my late show. It was like a Friday night before sideline order. And my phone dings, and it's my wife saying, "OMG, Mick Jagger." Well, you know, Taylor Swift brings out a major player in the middle of each concert. So she paraded out Mick Jagger. So my daughter's going, "Now, Mom, who's this guy? You know, Mick Jagger, you know?" She's screaming for Taylor. And my wife is having a fit like, "Oh, my God, I'm looking at Mick Jagger." So anyway, she puts on a great show. Okay, back to Dollar Bill real quick. You know, he just retired, WZZK, longtime, you know, country disc jockey, great guy. But he said when he was, Hall of Famer. I don't know if it was, I think it was at ZZK years ago. He used to have some people come into the studio, nice guy. And this young girl came in with her acoustic guitar and her mom and said, "Hey, do you mind if I sit in the studio and play a couple songs for you?" He said, "Yeah, whatever, kid." She was like, you know, 13. And, you know, they played, and she, you know, he said, "Oh, she sounded pretty good. She was cute," and she didn't bowl him over. And she said, "Very nice." I said, "Well, we're going to keep traveling the country and just visiting radio stations." And that girl was Taylor Swift in Birmingham. Yeah, kind of talking her way into radio.
Dollar Bill is responsible for her fame and fortune.
Right, exactly. That's my point. Dollar Bill, if it wasn't for him, you know, Taylor wouldn't be who she is, and she wouldn't be allegedly dating Travis Kelce. So there you go.
And Matt, what's your favorite fact about Taylor Swift?
She was named after James Taylor.
Really?
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Yeah, who was married to Carly Simon for many.
And what did Carly Simon's father do?
I give up.
He's the Simon of Simon and Schuster.
Wow. And he's so good.
And you know what? And Simon and Schuster has published one of my books. So there you go.
Really?
Four degrees. Right. I'm 4 degrees to Taylor Swift. 5 degrees?
You got backstage passes count. For the next Taylor Swift.
I lost count at Carly Simon. I don't know. Oh, hey, Ricky, let's do this again real soon. We don't do it enough. Thanks for your time, man.
Yeah.
Okay, guys. I'm going to go charge my phone. I appreciate you guys. Say hi to your wife. I'll see you at Publix, Matt.
Okay.
Thank you, Rick.
Yeah. Ricky. Rick and my wife have become rather close. I mean, as a friendship. That's all right.
Rick is awesome. I love Rick.
Yeah, he's a very good man, and what he said about passing along to others, he meant every word of it. He has helped us at my family out quite a bit over our, some of the mountains we've climbed over the last few years. So thanks to Rick Carley. Coming up, we're going to kind of go to opposite ends of the spectrum. Not really, but Reagan's coming up, and Reagan will blow you away too. We're going to do some college football picks so Matt can go 500 again. Back in a minute.
On the next Inside the Locker Room with Coach Wimp Sanderson and Barry Sanderson.
Tune in Friday. We'll look at the Ryder Cup, which will start early Friday morning. Also, Sonny Smith will join us at 8:15. We'll also talk about Dad's Blue Plate Special, get you ready for the weekend as Alabama takes on Mississippi State at 8 p.m. in Starkville.
Inside the Locker Room, weekdays 7 to 9 a.m. on Tide 100.9 and Tide100.9.com.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A warm afternoon, partly to mostly sunny with a high at 88. Clear tonight, the low 64. Tomorrow is sunny day, the high 87. And for the weekend, we stay warm and dry, sunny Saturday and Sunday. Highs between 86 and 89. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 78 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the Plains. This is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Hey, it is Thursday afternoon on Big Noon Sports, presented by Haley Sansing Union Home Mortgage. And this time of the week is when we bring in Reagan from R&R Cigars, the Cigar Mansion right there on 6th in downtown Tuscaloosa. Reagan, how are you, man? It was good to see you Saturday night. You came by walk-ons, and we visited for a very brief amount of time, but good to see you and your dad nonetheless.
Yeah, man, it was a fun time.
All right, here we go. Here we go. Well, I got to say, last week we all had a good week. Yours truly went 4-0 again. So I've hit my last 8 picks, which I've never done. And Reagan, you know what? I make the picks and then I overthink it and I don't gamble with what I actually pick. Oh, crap. All right. Yeah. So I was 4-0. Reagan, you were 3-1. Matt, 3-1 for the season. I'm in the lead here at 12-4. Matt's 10-6. Reagan, 9-7. Okay, so let's roll. Let's start with LSU at Ole Miss. Ole Miss is getting 2.5 points. So LSU's a 2.5 point favorite on the road. Let's start with Reagan.
I like LSU. I think they win outright. Very rarely do you ever win by less than 3 points when you're the better team. I don't know. Kelly's given Pete Golding fit for years. And, I think it's a letdown game for Ole Miss, you know, coming after loss last weekend. They got to go play LSU. I don't know. I think all the signs are there for an LSU win. And I'll take LSU in the points.
You know, I got to go LSU here, too. I'm not so sure that Nick didn't break Lane last Saturday afternoon. And it certainly exposed a lot of their weaknesses. So what was the margin again? What's the spread?
Ole Miss is getting 2.5.
I'm taking LSU all the way.
All right, I'm going Ole Miss. I just to be a contrarian. But... No, I think Ole Miss, this is going to be a really close game. You got to remember, LSU did not look like world beaters last week against Arkansas. All right.
Are you picking on my little piggies?
Yes.
Because of the competition.
Let's go USC traveling to Colorado. Colorado, a home dog, they are getting 21.5 points. Reagan.
Yeah, this one could be 35. I, you know, they're talking about the coaching fraternity is trying to stop Deion. Like, buddy, you couldn't stop a run up the middle for 7 yards a carry. Like, no, but there's no secret out there. Like, they were running it up the gut and gutting your team. You know, I think that it's just an embarrassingly bad beat for Colorado this weekend. I mean, Oregon could have hung 80 on them, and if they had it been running it up the middle 40 times that game. I'm not sure Lincoln Riley won't. You know, and Caleb Williams has a Heisman to prove and to win. I think this one's ugly. I don't give Colorado much of a chance. Hopefully they learned their lesson about talking trash before the game. Shiloh Sanders out there saying that he was going to, you know, beat the out of those guys, and then he's the one that ends up in the hospital. And, you know, that most bullies, that's how it ends up happening. But, you know, go back, get off the Deion train. It's coming off the tracks this week.
Caleb Williams and USC are just better. And right now, I'm not dissing Deion. Please don't blow me up on social media. But Lincoln Riley's a better coach, too. I mean, he's more established. So it's all on all fronts. Plus, you want to dazzle with Williams, get him a few Heisman votes. This is a good game to do it. So I'm all in on USC.
I'm all in on Colorado. Hate to say it. Have you guys seen USC play defense? Because they haven't Colorado's going to score points. And I think USC is going to win this game, but I don't think they're going to win it by more than there's a reason it's 21.5. I wouldn't be surprised if USC wins by 21, but I'm going Colorado. I'm taking those points. Reagan, Bama at Mississippi State. Bama started the week, I believe, at a 15.5 favorite. It's dropped to 14.5. You know, I know a lot of former Bama players hang at the mansion, and you talk to them. And what are your thoughts? And what are Alabama players, or just people close to the program that you talk to? What are they saying about this Alabama team?
Well, I mean, I think absolutely Alabama. I'll take Alabama and give the point. I saw a stat the other day. It was like something like Alabama hadn't allowed more than 10 points to Mississippi State since like 2017. I think that continues this week. You know, I don't think it matters who plays quarterback. I still want Dylan Lonergan to play the quarterback position. I'd really like to see him pitch today at the scrimmage if he's not going to play quarterback this weekend. But Alabama baseball has their scrimmage today, which after this show I will be heading over there. So watch that. Cool. But I really do think Alabama wins. I don't think it's close. I think Simpson probably gets to play some in the fourth quarter, maybe second half, not because Milroe played bad, but because Alabama had a good lead. I liked what I saw out of the offense more last week. They're really close. They're really close. They really are on offense. It's still just a couple just dumb penalties and some bad decision making. But I think offense is a lot closer to what they will be by the end of the season than they were versus Texas. So I like Alabama.
I'm taking Bama. All right, real quick, Kansas City at Jets. I want to talk to I do this every week. I want to talk to Reagan about Taylor Swift, but I don't have time. All right, Kansas City at Jets. Kansas City 9.5-point favorite on Sunday night. Reagan.
It's going to go as ugly for the Jets as it will when Taylor Swift and Kelsey breakup. It's going to be ugly either way. It's
going to be line horrible. Of the day.
Weeping and gnashing of teeth. Yeah. Like, they might have to cancel the NFL when Taylor Swift and Kelsey break up. That's going to be how ugly it'll be.
I'm taking KC. Matt, all three of us taking KC.
Hey, Reagan, thanks. We'll see you at the mansion soon, all right?
All right. See y'all.
All right. Appreciate it. R&R Cigar, the Cigar Mansion on Sticks, downtown Tuscaloosa. Drop by there, have a stick and a glass of bourbon. Lars, we'll do it again tomorrow. How's that? From Innisfree.
Look forward to it.